we're looking at Scott Walker's position favoring a move of power from the federal level to the state and the local level. Here's a quote from Governor Walker given at a meeting with the group American Legislative Exchange Council in San Diego back in July. Governor Walker said, "I'm for taking the power out of Washington and putting it in the hands of the hardworking taxpayers in states all across America. I know it can work. It's worked in our state. When you send power back to the local level, the level closest to the people is generally the best." Our next guest took a look at that position on shifting power to local levels to see how it lined up with on-the-ground policy in Wisconsin during Walker's time as governor. Jason Stein joins us now. He's the Capitol reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and the author of More Than They Bargained For, Scott Walker, Unions, and the Fight for Wisconsin. Jason, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Veronica. Thank you.
Well, Jason, we just heard that quote there from Governor Walker using language that calls for ceding power from the federal level to the state or the community level of government. Looking at his record in Wisconsin, what have you seen?
Well, you're absolutely right that the governor does talk about that on the campaign trail for the White House. I'm down today covering him at the Iowa State Fair in Des Moines. And, you know, he talked about that message again here today. But when you look at what Walker has done as the governor of Wisconsin, you know, it's more complicated. It's a mix of cases where he provided more flexibility to local officials, but in other cases where he tied their hands and imposed some state-level policies.
Well, if you look at Act 10, that's the governor's signature legislation repealing the collective bargaining rights for most public employees and allowing officials to make decisions about their employees. The governor argued that it gave greater economic flexibility to those local officials. Looking at that case, does it seem like this is the case of the policy fitting the rhetoric?
Well, that's absolutely a signature policy. And in many ways, it did give local officials more flexibility in how they dealt with their employees, both in terms of what they paid them and gave them in benefits, but also it gave them flexibility with work rules and things like that, whereas in the past, those things had been limited by union contracts. At the same time, there were also things that even Act 10 said local officials couldn't do. It prevented them from doing collective bargaining with their employees on their union employees on anything except a certain slice of wages, and it, you know, it did not allow them to bargain on other areas such as workplace safety or health benefits for most public employees.
And you did a survey of other policies there. Give us a rundown a little bit here, Jason. What did you find?
Absolutely. So Walker and lawmakers have also set limits on what tax and spending increases school boards and local officials, mayors and city councils can pass. They preempted Milwaukee's residency rules for its public employees. Those rules have been pretty popular in Milwaukee, and they dated back to 1938. So that law was actually reinstated last month by a state appeals court. But that decision is likely to go all the way up to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And then just one more example, Walker and lawmakers voided the paid sick leave law or ordinance that was passed by Milwaukee voters in a referendum.
Now, given some of the examples that you just gave us there and what you say in your piece, that the governor may be inclined to do this in the case of people who... regions that may be more liberal. Is that fair to say?
Well, you know, I mean, it's a good question, but certainly it's been the case that with a Republican legislature, Governor Walker has looked at some of the things that local officials in liberal parts of Wisconsin, like Bain County or the city of Milwaukee, they've looked at some of the things that those local elected officials did or were going to do, and they said, hey, you know, we don't agree with that. We're not going to let you do that. So, you know, it's an open question about, with a Republican Congress, would a President Walker leave a liberal state, like, say, Massachusetts? Would he let them pursue health care or some other policies in the exact way that they wanted to do that, or would he attempt to put some boundaries on that? I mean, it's an open question.
And can you argue, as some Republicans have, that policies that seem to take away the power from local officials are put into place to create a more cohesive state government in this case?
Sure. I mean, I think in governing, there's always this tension, right, between giving local officials the ability to and the freedom to pursue what their constituents want. There's always a tension between that and having a real balkanized system of government where you have, you know, one minimum wage in one community, another minimum wage in another community, and where, you know, a large-scale business that works across around a state or across state lines may find it difficult or burdensome to work in that area. But, you know, certainly Scott Walker so far has not been afraid to preempt local officials when he feels it's in the interest of the public.
And what is your overall takeaway then, looking at his track record? As you say, it's not a black and white thing, but does Governor Walker put policies empowering local governments in place?
Here's the thing. I would say most of the time, the party that's in the minority is a far greater supporter of local rights than and local control than the party that's in the majority. And I think that's true whether you're talking about Madison, Wisconsin, or Washington, D.C.
Now, you are at the Iowa State Fair right now, if I have it right.
I sure am. I just left there. I did not get a pork chop on a stick. The line was just incredible, and I needed to do this interview. So, but I am there. I was there, and we had good weather.
And you've been tracking Governor Walker as he continues on the campaign trail. What have you seen so far, and what have his stops been like?
You know, one thing that I thought was very interesting today was the way he interacted with demonstrators and with protesters. I really think they're, in some ways, his secret weapon. He was booed at points during his speech, and he responded that to one protester. He said, "I am not going to be intimidated by you, sir, or by anyone else out there. I'm going to fight for the American people." And clearly the conservatives in the crowd just ate that up, that they saw that as a sign of his authenticity as a conservative and his willingness to stick up for Republican principles. So in a way, the demonstrators of the governor's policies are like his comrades in arms on the campaign trail in this weird way.
Now, as you've been following him, we're in the post-debate time. That was a couple of weeks ago there, and we've seen the governor take a little bit of a dip in the polls since that debate. So have you seen any sort of change, either in rhetoric or tone or appearance schedule on the road following that debate?
Absolutely, I did, Veronica. One thing that you'll often hear the governor talk about is how he's not going to criticize his fellow Republicans. He's just going to focus on himself and on criticizing Democrats like frontrunner Hillary Clinton. But today, you heard him, he came out in his speech, again in his interviews with reporters, being very critical of the Republican Congress for not repealing Obamacare as they campaigned on, not sending a repeal of Obamacare to the president to be vetoed. Now, part of that is that Walker's going to talk about health care tomorrow in Minneapolis, going to talk about it this week. But another part of that was clearly trying to capitalize on this on these insurgent campaigns from people like Donald Trump and Ben Carson, who are Washington outsiders.
Jason, thanks a lot for joining us.
My pleasure.
That's Jason Stein, Capitol reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Coming up, we'll get two perspectives on the debate over whether or not Waukesha should be allowed to use water from Lake Michigan. I'm Veronica Rickert. Rob Ferret is out this week. You're listening to Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio.